You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Richard Kaufman and John Hawksworth.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Ryder Cup star Thomas Peters claims a long overdue European Tour title at the D&D Royale Czech Masters.
It's been a long time. It's been 3 years, almost 2.5 years since I last won. It feels good to win again. You know, I never doubted myself, but it's just been a long road of just kind of not feeling that great with the golf swing and off the course, and it feels good to get back on track again and get another win, yeah.
We'll chat to the Belgian as we review the week's action, and then we'll look ahead to the next event on the Race to Dubai, the Scandinavian Invitation in Sweden. Hello, I'm Richard Kaufman. Alongside me is former European Tour player John Hawksworth. Hello, John.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Very good on this fine Monday morning. On the end of the line, we have a golf journalist, Michael McEwen. Hi, Michael.
Good morning, chaps.
Hello to you. So, Thomas Peters, I suppose if I start with you, Michael, you kind of think at last, don't you?
I think so. Yeah, it's been a strange couple of years, or strange 3 years, I think, for Thomas. Since that incredible Ryder Cup debut. At that point, I think most people expected him to go on to bigger and better things, to become a bit of a force at the top end of the world rankings. And look, it didn't pan out that way. I guess he's kind of started again from scratch. But yeah, that win was a timely reminder of just how good a player he is, how much potential he's got. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him chalk another one off before the end of the season.
John, Robert Lee, who often sits in this seat here doing the Race to Dubai podcast, has talked about Peters as a potential world number one. Is he that good? And if he is, why is it taking him 3 years to win another European Tour title?
Swing-wise, I would say so. Mentally, I don't think so at the moment. I think he's a bit fragile from time to time. He's up and down, underachieved for me. All right, so he's won his fourth Race to Dubai title. Of course, he has won the World Cup with Detri. But for his game, he's probably got world number one potential, but it's not just about your game. But this week it worked out fine, but it hasn't shown a lot of form, to be fair.
Yeah, but he shot a couple of 67s first 2 days. Everything set up nicely. Eduardo Molinari was leading at the halfway stage. He then came to the fore, didn't he, in round three, went into the final round with a one-shot lead. And Michael, it was looking comfortable for him, wasn't it, most of the day?
Yeah, you know, I think John's hitting an interesting point there about the mental strength of Thomas, or I suppose the lack thereof that's been called into question a few times. He does have a bit of a temper on him. We have, I think, all seen the footage of him snapping the club around his neck at Wentworth maybe a couple of years ago now, which was quite incredible technique when you think back on it. But yeah, there have been question marks there. So I was interested to see how he coped with, you know, having that lead in front running. And yeah, he looked very, very comfortable. His decision making was good and didn't really make a huge number of mistakes. So yeah, all credit to him. Good to see him back in the winner's enclosure.
Thomas is going to be on with us in a short while, John. I mean, I suppose we when we speak to him, we need to ask him about that mental side of things.
You're only as good as your next round. All professional sportsmen, the biggest enemy is themselves. In whatever you play, snooker, darts, tennis, football, golf, it's about what's going on between your ears. You might look great on the range. I can tell a story of Stenson a couple of years ago with Cowan in America. Cowan stood there for half an hour and never said a word to Stenson, who flushed it. And Cowan said to him, "I bet you'd like the tournament to start now, Wednesday." And Stenson said, "I can't hit it. I haven't been able to hit it for 2 years." And Cowan said, "You've won $36 million in the last 2 years." That was the state of Stenson's brain when he won the Open at Troon. He didn't want to go out on the Saturday. He thought he was hitting it rubbish. So it just goes to show they are so fragile, professional sportsmen. You might think they look great on the range, but you've no idea what they're thinking.
Were you a fragile golfer?
I was all right when I was all right. When I wasn't all right, I wasn't all right. Do you understand that?
Not at all. Michael, are you with it?
No, when I was playing well, it was fine. When you weren't playing well, you wondered how you ever did play well.
But Michael speaks about the, you know, the club over the neck, the one over the knee, the
putt that goes. Well, that's just classic.
Is that just normal?
Absolutely normal. You are boiling like a kettle inside. Garcia throwing his club in America into the middle of the lake. We've seen McIlroy, we've seen Garcia dig the face out of a bunker. You've no idea what's going on in a professional sportsman's brain. Ronnie O'Sullivan, I love watching him play snooker. Probably one of the most fragile sportsmen of all time. And then you look at Federer, who looks completely unflappable. It's irrelevant how good everybody else thinks you're playing and swinging. It's down to the person what he's thinking inside. That is the only thing that matters.
Andy Murray's a really good example of that, though, isn't he? Because, you know, if you remember him in the early part of his career, he wasted so much energy reacting to both good and bad shots. And he never really seemed to have the energy or the stamina to see out a five-set match. He would always wilt. It was as soon as he found that inner calm and the ability to, you know, have that equilibrium over shots, no matter how good or bad, that he started to win slams. So, yeah, I think, you know, John's absolutely got the nail on the head right there. As soon as players can find a way to compartmentalise how they're feeling and just go out and execute, that's when they're at their most dangerous.
I'll tell you something. A golf professional spends far too much time on the range trying to convince himself that he's a good player rather than working on the mental side and dealing with the fact if you don't play so well, you can still get it around the golf course. I play with Langer a lot, and Langer could hit some shots that a 24 handicapper would hit, but you never knew what he was doing. And look at the career he's had.
Yeah, it's interesting, but let's look at Thomas Peters and his career. This is a guy who was an NCAA champion. When he won that, he beat a field that included Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas. We all know what he did this weekend as well. Patrick Cantlay. We're talking PGA Tour winners. We're talking about a guy who just a couple of years ago was fourth at the Masters, top five in a World Golf Championship event in Mexico. It must have been frustrating him, John, that he's gone from that level where he, you know, wins three times in 12 months, stars in a Ryder Cup, does the sort of things I'm talking about at major championships or big events, to then not being able to see off what I'd call standard European Tour events.
Well, he's, as I said, mentally, he's obviously up and down like a bride's guest list, isn't he? It's the people who think consistently. You look at the way Woods, his career, he's won most of his tournaments off the fairway, make no mistake about it. Now, the sign of a good player is not how good you are when you're playing good, it's how good you are when you're playing badly. The rest of it, I've stood on the range and watched him flush it. And I mean absolutely flush it. And now to hit it like that, it's in there. But what's going on upstairs determines whether you can take that out on the golf course.
Yeah, Michael, you look at his driving, don't you? I mean, the way he drove the ball on Sunday in particular, I know it nearly cost him at 15, but generally he just tore the Albatross Golf Resort apart. He's clearing bunkers easily that were supposed to be there and trip you up.
Yeah, I think that sort of golf course that's just tailor-made for somebody like Thomas, who has such power and, you know, relative accuracy off the tee. You know, if he can keep the ball in play, then really it's going to come down to the strength of his short game and his putting, which when you look back at what he did when he won those three events and even the way he played in the Ryder Cup, his putting was the most important aspect of his game. It's a little bit of an odd one, Peter, because he has absolutely every single tool, but the only question has been over his mental strength. And when you put all the pieces together, you're going to have a guy who's going to win multiple times. It's no surprise to me, really, Richard, to hear some of the guys that he was beating in the NCAA events, the caliber of the players, because if you put all the pieces together and it all clicks, you have a hell of a golfer on your hands.
I'll tell you another thing with sports people. When you've been to the highest level, so let's call the Ryder Cup, he's not won majors, it's hyped up by the press, the players love it, you get their team room, you win, you play fantastic. Sometimes you don't get to that state again mentally and that excited. So you come off that and come back down. You don't actually get turned on by what you're doing particularly. Maybe this might give him the kick up the backside that he may have needed, that he's a winner again and the juices are flowing. But Ryder Cup, the way he played in the States to do what he did, he might have just been on a massive flat after that. And it happens. A lot of players never get back to the best having played Ryder Cup again.
And he's only 27, Michael, isn't he? I mean, golfing-wise, it's no age. I know we're seeing so many young players come on to the PGA Tour, the European Tour, and hit the ground running. And Thomas obviously kind of did that when he first came out as well. But still plenty of time on his side to reach the big heights his talent obviously has.
That's the exciting thing. You know, he's 27 years old. I think the average age of major winners over the last decade is somewhere around 31, 32. So he's still got a good few years before he's hitting what many would consider his competitive peak. four wins as well in the European Tour by the age of 27. Not a lot of players have that. Yeah, it's becoming a younger game, definitely. But, you know, Thomas is still one of the younger players. And slumps, if you want to call what he's been on a bit of a slump, these happen. It's how you deal with it and how you come out of it. It's if you come out of it. And, you know, evidently, I think we can take winning as a sure sign that Thomas is coming out of that. So if I was him, I would be pretty excited about what the rest of the season holds. He's got a few big events to look forward to there. The final series, obviously, is a good opportunity for him. Then who knows what next year could bring. It's exciting to see him back, sort of playing closer to the potential and the kind of guy that we saw at the Ryder Cup. It's good to see that player hasn't been lost to the slump.
And John, all his wins have been like August, September. Is that a coincidence? I mean, the World Cup apart, that was obviously later in the year, but they've all been second half of the year, if you like, at least.
Well, there might be something in it, whereas earlier in the year, you know, you get towards the end of the year, you have a break, then you go to the desert. Some players are a little bit rusty, then you don't get off to a great start and you're having a bit of a moan at yourself, and then you start to settle down. And then towards the end of the year, you start to play better. But I mean, I'm looking at the results sheet from the Czech Republic, and no disrespect to any of the players, but when you look at Thomas Peters and the game he's got in that field, he would be, for me, a class above the rest. But there's a difference to winning.
Yeah, I mean, Westwood was in the field, obviously. Yeah, but he missed the cut.
Westwood's late 40s Harrington now. We're talking well. 20 years.
Wiesberger was there.
Yeah, Harrington, you know, into his 40s now. Wiesberger wouldn't be in the same ballpark for me with Peters.
Fair enough.
Playing man-to-man on their best. It hits it different gravy. You go on about, it's a young man's sport. These golf courses at 7-6 now, they're irrelevant. They're measured from point to point, and for the punter to look at it, they're ridiculous. But these lads are flying at 320 on the angle of a dog leg with a bit of turn and getting the ball to go 350. 61 from Thomas in America on a golf course. It was 7-7.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. I want to talk about this final round, but Michael, John's just brought this point up now. Adam Scott this week was complaining about courses that length means nothing anymore. You can't build courses long enough. Justin Thomas, he mentioned the 61. We've seen, you know, what was it, 19 under the winning score from Thomas Peters here. That driving is not a skill anymore. There's some interesting comments that Adam Scott made.
Yeah, very interesting. It's interesting, I think, that the comments have come following, obviously, or during the BMW Championship in the States. Look, Medina was particularly soft. It was there for the taking, and the way it was set up, it was inviting birdies. It was a soft, receptive greens. Yet length as an issue for players, no, it's not anymore. And, you know, Adam's not the first guy to say this. I remember speaking to Harrington on the range at Wentworth, I think, if I'm right in saying, it's probably about 6 or 7 years ago, and he used almost exactly the same line. He said that length doesn't scare professional golfers, and neither it should. The equipment that they're using these days enables them to hit the ball prodigious distances, and I've got to be honest, I don't really have a huge problem with it. I'd like to see more shot shaping. I'd like to see more imagination required, but that's to do... There are ways you can set up golf courses to make it more imaginative and still see players hitting the ball huge distances, because that's what the modern men's professional game is built on. That's its identity, is its power. People ask, you know, why women's golf and the LPGA doesn't get as much attention. It's because there's no real obvious hook for me in terms of what it is. The women play a great game. It's very rhythmic. And I actually think most amateur men could learn more from watching them. But the PGA Tour, the European Tour, it's power-based. It's about distance. It's about how far you drive it. You know, a lot of people get upset about it and think that equipment needs to be reined back in and so on and so forth. It's a very layered argument. Then you're starting to talk about things like bifurcation and whether that's a good thing. I'd like to see more skill. I'd like to see more imagination. But I don't have a real issue with the fact that courses are long on the European Tour and the players are having to hit the ball 350 yards just to be competitive. It doesn't really upset me a huge amount.
Let me tell you, I was in Sweden a few years ago, a place called Brohofslott, and I'm talking 7 years ago. Off the back tees there, Brohofslott was built for the Ryder Cup bid, 8,300 yards. Now then, that's because technology is not going to stand still and the ball has reached its optimum now. But I tell you, the only thing to do here, and it's in every other sport, is bring out a ball that everybody uses. You do not at Wimbledon, if Nadal's serving, gets his own balls out against Federer because they come off another 6 miles an hour faster. You don't use your own white ball at snooker. At squash, you have to use a ball. at rugby, at football, why on earth have we got these balls? Bring the ball out that everybody uses that is exactly the same. And also put some thicker rough on the golf course and make driving or putting the ball in position much more of a premium than blasting it 320 over the corner of bunkers into 30-yard wide fairways. But I would bring out a professional ball just for competition.
Can I just throw a stat at this? Driving accuracy stat. The number one player on the European Tour driving accuracy stat is 75%. And he's only played a few events. He's only played 21 rounds. That's Prom Misawat. The next best is under 70%. So Adam Scott's saying there's no skill in driving, yet the number one driver, and it's a very similar statistic on the PGA Tour, is still only around the 70% mark.
Yeah, but it means that the cabbage that's off the fairways is not that severe. Make it severe. So that if you go in the rough, it is a hack out. Make it almost a penalty shot. I think it's ridiculous when these guys... I mean, let's go back to Thomas. 61 around that golf course is just absolutely ridiculous. And Thomas is long, but he's not one of the longest.
We should mention it's Justin Thomas as opposed to Thomas Pieces.
Yeah, Justin Thomas, that's right. Great skill. He's obviously putted superbly well. But you got to remember, NASA are involved in the design of the ball, and they don't design anything that isn't going upwards. You know, when we played a few years, good few years ago, you used to hit it flatter to get the ball to run out, to maybe hit it to 75. Now, they're flying it 320 through the air, taking on angles of doglegs, over trees, over ponds, over traps and everything, and just reducing these golf courses to nothing. I would tighten them up and bring out a professional ball that everybody has to use. End of.
The other thing there is that people seem to be scared of low numbers as if it's something that we should protect all golf courses against. And, you know, I'm personally against a lot of changes being made to the old course. I think some courses should, as much as possible, be left as they are. I get that evolution's a key part of the game, but it should be evolution and not revolution. And sometimes that line's been blurred for some of the classic courses to accommodate technology. But
do you mean St Andrews?
Yeah, the old course at St Andrews, for example, moving the 17th tee onto the driving range for when the Open comes to town. And a lot of people are saying, well, you know, that's the only way to protect the course. Well, no, I don't necessarily agree that it's required. You know, if someone goes out and shoots 60, 59 around the old course, I'm not especially bothered. It makes it more entertaining and more people want... People tune into Augusta on the back nine on Sunday because they know they're going to get birdies. And for that spell in the mid-2000s when they weren't getting that, when they tiger-proofed the course, by common consent, the Masters was less entertaining. We're trying to bring people into golf. Well, the only way to do that is to give them more of what they want to see, which is players shooting low numbers.
Get a dry summer at St Andrews. It could be 26 under par. Dry summer, no wind.
Yeah, you know, I'm not really that bothered if someone shoots 26 under par because, you know, I think we get too obsessed in golf over par. You know, I remember Peter Alice once telling me the best thing we can do for the future of the game is just remove par as a concept altogether because every week the lowest score wins. So if someone goes out and shoots 26 under around the old course, as long as it's a good tournament and people are entertained by it, I don't really see the issue. It's still the lowest score that's winning.
We could talk about this forever, but it's nice to move away from last week's issue, which was slow play. Although if you make a course over 8,000 yards, it might take a little bit longer as well. But back to the Czech Masters, where we did have one of the longest holes, I think, of the season in the ninth hole, over 600 yards, the par five, although saw a few eagles there. Despite that, even Robert Carlsen, I think, who's 15 a few weeks, managed a three at the ninth. But on that front nine, we talked about Thomas Pieters and, you know, the putting being crucial. He did miss a number of chances, but he managed to keep everyone, it seemed, at arm's length. How crucial were the 15th and 16th holes? And did it get worrying for him, John, at all, do you think?
Well, it doesn't get worrying. I mean, you mean the par-saving putts?
Yeah, you know, he 1 minute he's four shots ahead. In the end, he ends up winning by one.
Yeah, which doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter how many you win by as long as it is one. I thought it showed great character when he held at 15 and 16. Arnaus was charging a bit over the last four holes, but it was kind of... I always felt he was going to run out of holes, Arnaus, and Pieters looked so good. But the par putts that you hold to keep your momentum going, as they use that word in the game, I think are far more important than the birdie putts that you make. That's the metal, because mentally it can flick you around. You make a couple of bogeys late, and then suddenly it's very edgy over the last few holes. I mean, in the end, he found the right rough up 18. Thomas Peters, Arnaus hit a good second shot in, but Peters found the green in two, and it was a done deal then. I think he should give himself an awful lot of credit for the fact that he did hold those two putts on 15, 16, and he got across. I don't care it's only one shot. It's a victory. That's the important thing.
Delighted to say Thomas Peters is on the line now, the new two-time D&D Rao Czech Masters champion. Thomas, congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, well played, Thomas.
Well played.
Thank you. Yeah, obviously a place that has special memories for you, Thomas. That's where you had your maiden European Tour title. It'd been a few years since your last individual win. How satisfied are you waking up this morning as a European Tour champion again?
Yeah, very. It took way too long. It's nice to just finally get it over with, and then hopefully I don't have to wait that long for the next one.
We were just talking about the closing stretch there, you know, what happened at 15 and 16. How comfortable were you feeling out there at that stage?
I didn't really get nervous until maybe the last, you know, 16 when I had the awful putt. But I thought 15 was something I wouldn't have done maybe a year or two ago. I would have probably taken a whack at it and took it from there. But I saw the lie, and I thought, you know, what's the best I'm going to do? And I thought I'm only 100 yards away, so I can still make par from here. And then, I think when I'm three-putted on 16 and Adrie made a birdie, that's when I got a little bit nervous, but I had some lovely shots coming in. And that's always more satisfying to just to know you can hit those really nice shots coming down the stretch.
Thomas, I was watching a lot throughout the week. On Friday, things seemed to be getting a little frustrating. You went on a run of pars, and everyone else around you is making a lot of birdies. And then you finish with those three birdies in a row to suddenly put you into the final group at the weekend. Mm-hmm. Was that key to your week, do you think? Or was there somewhere else that you'd put your finger on as being the most important spell for you?
Yeah, that could have been one of the turning points. It's another one of these kind of things that I learned over the past years, that, you know, staying patient, it's easy to say, and it's not that easy to do. But, you know, as you say, I went on a run for, it was pars for, lucky enough, it was pars, not bogeys. But to finish with three birdies on three quite difficult holes, that was very satisfying on a Friday when I wasn't getting anything out of my rounds, because I felt like I played four really, really good rounds.
We know this game is a game of confidence, Thomas. Mm-hmm. Is it something that fluctuates with you? Because obviously you're such an awesome player. Do you find it a little bit hard sometimes to keep the confidence level on an even keel?
Yeah, I think it kind of comes and goes with my driving. You know, this week I told my caddy yesterday as well, whenever I feed it up on a par four or par five, I felt zero pressure or doubts in my mind. I just ripped it down the middle, and I felt like I was doing that all week and didn't really miss a fairway. So it makes the game so much easier for me, because, you know, I'm hitting less clubbing than everybody else. You know, you take all the pressure off your game, and then it's just about making putts. But if you give yourself 12 or 13 chances around, you're going to definitely make a couple. So
it's a great advantage, the way that you flight the ball. So obviously that golf course, I mean, you've won there before, you won again yesterday. Is that the sort of layout and course that you like to play, you feel comfortable on? Or do you think it's important that you adapt yourself to win on all sorts of styles of golf course?
Well, yeah, yesterday when I saw it was blowing pretty hard, I like that, because, you know, it takes away the guy that's going to shoot, you know, the perfect game without wind, and it takes a skilled player to still shoot.
Yeah.
Like Pavan had an amazing round to shoot 7 under, and that wind was very impressive. So I thought that was in my favor that it was windy yesterday. But yeah, like you said, this course really suits me. I can, you know, play with Patrick and Lee the first 2 days. And I was, for example, on 11, I could hit it over the corner 3 days in a row, which, you know, I think I was, maybe 80 yards in front of them, just because we were taking such different lines. And that, obviously, when you can do that 3-4 times in a round, it helps. But I definitely enjoy links golf more than this one, because you have to think more, you have to be more creative. This is more of a, you know, you see your shot and you just bomb it.
you'd have one top 10, Thomas, since you played the Czech Masters the year before. You know, John's talking about the amount of talent you have, and we obviously saw that on display, not just this week, but in previous events, at Ryder Cups, at the Masters, places like that. A lot's been made of your mentality. I'm sure you're aware of how viral some of your club snapping has gone over the years. In terms of the mental side of the game, is that something you've been working very hard on?
Yeah, I think I just made a point of not snapping clubs and not letting myself go. And definitely a more balanced life off the course for me now than before. And, you know, not everybody can judge any player for snapping a club or anything.
No.
Nobody really knows what's going on behind the scenes. And I think, like I said, I've just been more balanced on and off the course. And I haven't snapped, fingers crossed, anything this year. And I won't this year because I made a point to my caddy not to do it this year. So that's lovely.
It is. I could tell you, I once snapped all my golf clubs, Thomas. There was nothing finer. They were absolutely useless.
Well, let me tell you, it wasn't the club.
No, I know.
Michael McEwen's with us as well. Michael, I'm sure you want to ask Thomas something.
Yeah, you know, I'm interested, Thomas. Congratulations, first of all.
Thank
you. Great win. Great to see you back winning. You know, on the point of snapping clubs, it seems that there's an awful lot of negativity that comes out from people on social media when players do it. To me, I don't really think it's a huge issue. I don't think it's something that players should get as criticised for as they do. Do you think it's something that people are too precious about?
Yeah, I mean, my opinion is my opinion, but I don't, you know, if you look at baseball or hockey, they snap clubs, you know, tennis, they snap, they break rackets. It's, if you're not harming the course, if you know, if you do it over the knee, whatever, I get it. It's not fun to watch for kids and all that. But I think, you know, sometimes you run hot and that's just kind of how people react. And, you know, I've maybe not dealt with it in the best way, but I mean, you look at Spence and he never shouts or yells or anything. He just sometimes he just breaks and snaps a club and he kind of just moves on the spot. So I don't think it's something you should get fined for a bundles, but, you know.
Yeah, so Thomas, obviously a fantastic win now. Does that change your plans at all for the rest of the year moving forward?
No, just... I'm, you know, keeping the same schedule. I hope I just get into some of the late ones like China HSBC. That's the one I haven't missed in 4 or 5 years. And, you know, I'm not really in the picture for that, but this kind of brings me closer to all those fun events. And hopefully I can get back in the top 50 because it, you know, it's definitely hurt me mentally as well to fall out of the top 50 last year and fall out of the top 100 in the first time in years. So that was, yeah, it's always something, you know, I don't really like to look at the rankings that much, but when you're falling, you know, week in, week out, it's not a fun feeling. So it's nice to go the right way now.
I'll tell you what, it's good because it sounds to me like it's revved you up again. You know, you mentioned the top 50, you mentioned the top 100. That's what it's all about, the big event. For me, it's fantastic to see you win again. You won in style. I had the privilege to watch it. So I hope you have more to come this year.
Thank you very much. I hope so too.
Yeah, Thomas, you're 84th in the world now. You mentioned you played the first 2 days with Porger Carrington. I suppose another goal would be to make sure you play in his Ryder Cup 12 as well.
Of course. That's the goal every 2 years, to make that. You know, I missed the last one, and I kind of told myself after Hazeltine not to miss one, and definitely hurt last time. You know, I was emotionally a bit broken when I didn't make it, but... It's the way life goes, and hopefully I can make Patrick's team.
It was fantastic what you did. I was there when you won in Denmark. That was an incredible, you won't remember, we were sat in the hotel and you couldn't believe it. But I'm sure there's plenty more of those to come from you, Thomas Peters.
Yeah, thank you very much. I hope so.
Yeah, congratulations again, Thomas, and thanks very much for joining us here today.
No problem. Thanks,
Good
guys.
Luck. Bye. Bye.
So, John, very interesting there. I mean, interesting to me was the point where he said that he talked to his caddy about making it a goal not to snap clubs. Not that he thought there was anything wrong with it, but maybe it's just to keep him in that focused state that we saw him play in the Czech Republic this week.
He made a point there. He made a point there where he said, you don't know sometimes what's going on off the course. It's not all about the press and people and commentators standing on the range going, gosh, he looks good. You don't know. I mean,
no, everyone has a personal life. Everyone has issues going on. We don't know about it. But it's interesting that he said he'd made that a goal this year, not to snap anymore.
Well, no, the thing that's interesting to me is he's a lot more settled off the course. He's not made a goal not to snap clubs.
But he said
he's happy. He may well have done, but he's happier off the course, which will stop him snapping clubs.
Sure.
But for Peters, he's in a good place. And if a professional sportsman is in a good place, they are able to operate a lot better than their brain's like a box of frogs.
Yeah, and Michael, that's the same for, I suppose, in any profession, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. You know, even working as a journalist, you find some days you are able to operate better than others because, you know, things are great at home or they're not great at home. You know, everyone has a personal life, but I think we just get so accustomed to seeing professional sportsmen, golfers, tennis players, footballers, whatever it is, in that one singular environment, and we assume that we know them, especially now the way social media is.
Correct.
It's a great tool, but unfortunately social media is just a snapshot of the best bits. You don't see many people going on Facebook and spilling their guts about how terrible a time that they're having. Some might, but most won't. Most will put up pictures of their dinner and you'll say, all right, great, everything's good and nice and rosy in their life.
Okay, so quick question for both of you. Start with you then, Michael. Thomas Peters, will he be in Padraig Harrington's team? What do you think?
It's not even started yet till Switzerland.
I know, it's very close. It's around the corner. And we're talking about a player that I think we've all agreed is potentially up there with the world's best if he can keep this kind of form going.
If things are just settled off the course and he's in a better place mentally, then yes, absolutely no reason why not.
75-25.
In favour?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I think I go along with what both of you are saying. Now, we haven't really mentioned, we kind of said it in passing, the guy who finished second to Thomas Peters was Audrey Arnaus, finished on 18 under par after an eagle, four birdies and three bogeys in his closing 69.
I never gave up. I try to, you know, make some birdies coming in and see if he made a mistake, which he didn't. He was solid, getting up and down on 15, and overall, like a really good battle. So happy.
What were you thinking after 16? Obviously, you made two shots up on him on that par three and two holes to go.
Yeah, at that point, it came to my mind like it was sort of like a match play. So I just tried to, you know, beat him in two holes, which I did, but came one short.
Very close to equaling Sergio and winning your first European Tour title on your 24th appearance on tour. You'll take a lot from this week, though, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Every week I come out here, I learn and take a lot from this one for sure. And, you know, enjoying the process and hopefully I can be up there again following weeks.
Well, no one likes a know-it-all, do they, John, really? But if you go into the archives and you listen to the first podcast of the season where we were asked to pick out one to watch for the year, St. Richard Kaufman said, look out for Audrey Arnaus as one to pick.
Do you know, MI5 are looking for people like you.
Three runner-up finishes this season, Michael. He's obviously, you know, what he did when he came through the Challenge Tour last season, what he did on the Alps Tour the year before, and what he's doing now. Maybe not quite at the level of Thomas Peters, obviously, but certainly someone who's got an abundance of talent.
Yeah, exciting player to watch. I love the way that he's done it, you know, really climbing up through the ranks. Reminds me a little bit of, obviously, Matt Wallace has had to take the long journey. Someone like Scott Jamieson, if you want to go back even further, came up to the Euro Pro, then the Challenge, got to the European Tour. The next thing for Audrey is obviously to start winning events. You know, he's been there or thereabouts a good few times now, and I don't know what it is about Spain. I mean, they just seem to be producing quality player after quality player, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's the next one to win.
Where's he now, John, on the Race to Dubai rankings? Do you know?
Well, I will do if you give me a minute. I tell you, do you know who was caddying for Arnaus?
Go on.
Pedro Linhart, that used to play on the regular tour and plays on the senior tour for a while. He's been, and so was another Spaniard, Ignacio Garrido.
Was caddying for him.
Has been caddying for
him.
He's
30th on the Race to Dubai rankings.
Well, I would have told you that, but I hadn't had time
The reason why I asked that, because he won the grand final on the Alps Tour at the end of 2017. He won the grand tour final on the Challenge Tour at the end of 2018. So he's got to be in the top 50 to make it all the way through to the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. Given the way he hits the ball, his length, I think, come November time and the final event of the Race to Dubai season.
eventually, as I like to say, he will be the full salad. There'll be nothing missing.
Even tomatoes, cucumbers, the lot.
I think he's going to have a big career.
Yeah, Valderrama, Kenya, and now Czech Republic, he's been second. So, yeah, the pedigree's there.
In smaller tournaments, yeah, but I think he's got the game.
Well, Valderrama was a big event, really.
Yeah, he's got the game to go on and go to the next level. I've watched quite a lot of Iron House. He's still on a learning journey, but he's had a lot of good finishes early. And this game is about confidence, Richard.
Okay. Well, remember, I picked him at the start of the year. Remember now
I've
picked
forgotten
him.
It already.
Remember now I've picked him to win the Tour Championship in Dubai.
You've picked him to win the DP World Tour Championship?
Yeah.
Now, are you of sound mind?
Call me Claire. Clairvoyant. Okay, John, just give us the top ten then
right. From
the D&D Royale Czech Masters.
Right, well, we know Thomas Peters prevailed by one shot, 19-under, over Adri Arnhaus, and two players tied third. Sam Horsfield, Andrea Pavan closed with a 65. And then tied fifth, Liam Johnson from Scotland, Raquel Carlberg, who's been out for 18 months with injury, Hugo Leon from Chile, who came out of the tour school, 34 years of age, a great performance. Matthias Schwab, the impressive Austrian, and Eric Van Rooyen, who has had another top 10. And then in 10th place, on his own, was the 11-time winner on the race by Robert Carlson, who will soon be, Richard, 50.
Yeah, a couple of weeks till he's 50. He said he's going to go to Q School.
In America.
For the Champions Tour.
Yeah, he will have to go to Q School. He'll be exempt out on the Stayshore Tour, but yeah, he would have to go to, and that is a tough school. There's only about three spots, and to be honest, they don't want you over there.
Yeah, but given the way Carlson's playing, I mean,
he'll get some invites, so he's played Ryder Cup, and hopefully he'll get some invites. We'll see, but I wish him well, but he's still fit as a butcher's dog.
Yeah, he doesn't really look any different to Robert Carlson 20 years ago. No,
he's never aged, but he's had a fantastic career. It's nice to see him playing well again. He hasn't had the best of times, but he's going to turn his attentions to probably senior golf. And there is a category out on the Race to Dubai where he still will be able to play. Ola Tharbel's in it. I think Monty's in it. He's in it. So he might to and fro, but he's been a great player.
And, Michael, decent defence, wasn't it, from Andrea Pavan?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we spoke to him not that long ago after his most recent win. Quality player. I kind of feel like he's the sort of player who next year is going to make a bit of a Ryder Cup push. I know that maybe sounds a little bit strange to say it so far out, but if he maintains this sort of form and he continues to develop at the rate he's been developing, then he is an outside bet for me to be on the plane to the States.
Big week, wasn't it, for Sam Horsfield? He was struggling on the Race to Dubai ranking, so that's a nice little lift for him at the start of this second part of the season. And what did you make of Hugo Leon's putting stance? What was it Tony Johnston called it? The elephant at the waterhole stance?
Yeah, it was a little bit like a giraffe going down for water, but, I mean, he's putted like that through his career. It's a good story. He's 34 years of age, 24th at the tour school last year. A great finish for him there, and that position will get him into the next full field event. Because he's inside the top 10. If it was co-sanctioned, it would have to be top 5. So coming out of the tour school, you don't get starts all the time, and you certainly don't get to play the big tournaments. So to keep your card is extra hard, but well done to him.
OK, now, of course, sitting in our seats last week were Dan Roebuck, Richard Boxall and Adrian Millerick, and they got to predict who would do well at the Czech Masters. Reminder of the format in our predictions. We get a couple of picks each. One must be outside the top 50 in the final 2018 Race to Dubai standings. You get 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, and you lose 5 points for a missed cut. Now, Dan Roebuck went with Andrea Pavan, so that was a pretty good pick, wasn't it?
And a stroke of luck, I would say.
Well, no, it's a good pick. Gavin Green also looked like a good pick, didn't he? He was going very well. He was leading the way for the second year in a row after day one, but unfortunately he fell back into 58th place in the end. So 10 points for Dan. Boxy, Tom Lewis, poor Tom, withdrew after round one.
Well, Boxy's another one that couldn't pick washing off a line.
And he went for Paul Waring as well, tied 30. So minus 5 points for Boxy. And Adrian Millerick went for Padraig Harrington, who, of course, it was a runner-up last year, finished 58th. And Eddie Pepperell, who missed the cut. So minus 5 points as well from Adrian.
Well done, lads. Yeah. Well done.
Dan did decent, I thought. You know, Andrea Pavan, Gavin Green, that was all right. It was okay. Let's see how we do this week before we start shouting too loudly.
It's so easy picking winners, Richard.
Especially the week after. Overall, the presenters have 170 points. The co-presenters are on 85. The guests have 75. So no pressure on you, Michael, to try and lift them off the bottom then. If you want to get involved, go to my European Tour section of europeantour.com. That's for our Fantasy Race to Dubai game. Lee Finlay, he still leads the global leaderboard that we have. John, have you got the top 10 of the Race to Dubai standings?
Might have. In 10th spot, Jorge Campillo. 9th spot, Matthew Fitzpatrick. 8th spot, Xander Schauffele. 7th, Louis Oosthuizen. 6th, Kevin Kisner. 5th, Matt Wallace. 4th, Tommy Fleetwood. 3rd, John Rahm. 2nd, Bernd Wiesberger. And the leader at the moment, the Open Champion. What a title that is. Shane Lowry.
Yeah. Talking of Open Champions, Paul Laurie claimed his first title.
He did.
This week on the Stayshore Tour, a home victory at the Scottish Senior Open. John, you've been keeping your eyes, I know, across that. You're doing a bit of commentary on that.
I'm doing a lot of commentary on that, Richard. Yeah, Craigie Law Golf Club. Weather was tough as well, but nice to see Paul Laurie get a victory in his home Open, first year out on the Stayshore Tour. And brilliant. It was a good crowd up there. There's a lovely highlights programme for that coming up on Wednesday. And it should be interesting to see how he got it round there. But I think he was the only one under par at the end of the week. It was a tough week.
Yeah, level par, final round to win by two from Peter Baker and Peter Fowler, as you say, at Craigie Law Golf Club. Michael, were you able to get over there and watch any of that?
I wasn't able to get over, I'm afraid. I was on daddy duty all weekend looking after the little one. But Paul did as best I could, and delighted for Paul. He's had a tough couple of years. At one point last year, he thought his career might actually be over because he had this terrible foot injury. But fortunately, that seems to be behind him now. And, you know, I know he was excited about turning 50 and getting onto the Seniors Tour. Great that he's won in Scotland. He'll be delighted to get off the mark, particularly here. And he's continued this incredible run of winning tournaments in Scotland. You know, never mind the Open in 99, but he's won the Johnny Walker, Glen Eagles. He won the Dunhill Links at St Andrews. And now he's got another title at Craigie Law. So something in the water here in Scotland that clearly works well for Paul Laurie.
And just on that as well, because, I mean, what he's given back to Scottish golf, Michael, not everyone might be aware of it, but it's been pretty immense.
Yeah, it's hard to measure, quite honestly. Through the Paul Laurie Foundation, he has introduced so many young kids to the game. He's given lots of young players opportunities. He's supported them. He's mentored them. David Law, who won in Australia, got his first European Tour title earlier this year, is probably the most high-profile product of the Paul Laurie Foundation. There have been other guys on the Challenge Tour, on the Ladies European Tour. He's incredibly supportive of all levels of the game in Scotland. You know, during his weeks off over the last decade or so, it's not been uncommon for him to go and play a local PGA event, to play in Northeast District events. He's an incredibly loyal supporter of golf in Scotland, and for my money he's done more than anyone or any organisation to help raise the profile and to get kids swinging golf clubs. So I'm delighted to see he's continuing to be able to play first and foremost, but to get a win as well. It's the very least that he deserves. And you know, I've had the privilege to get to know Paul pretty well in the 15 years I've been at Bunkered, and you know, I can only hope that this is just the start of the second chapter of his career. So best of luck to him, and here's hoping there's some more to come.
Yeah, and of course he has. He's got a great par 3 course up in Aberdeen, and they have the Paul Laurie Par 3 Championship, which has been going now for 3 years, and it attracts Alistair Forsyth plays in it, and David Dixon, and all sorts of other celebrities and professionals. It's becoming a big event, but he has done an awful, awful lot for golf, and it's nice to see him win. It'll have done him good. That's the main thing, to win that Scottish senior event.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to hearing your commentary on that, John.
I bet you are.
There'd be some great commentary as well on the Challenge Tour this week.
Really?
Yes. Wonder who's doing that. Jack Senior beat Matt Baldwin in a playoff to win the ISPS Handa World Invitational Men Women, presented by Modest Golf Management. Might take me the 52 minutes just to get the title out.
In Ireland.
At Galgum Castle Golf Club, yes, in Northern Ireland. Second Challenge Tour win, but first for 4 years. Last week's Race to Dubai show guest, Callum Hill, had another top 10 finish, which sees him go top of the Challenge Tour ranking. So, yeah, looking good, isn't he, Callum, to getting his European Tour card. Of course, if he wins one more time, he'll get automatic
promoted,
promotion.
Which is what happened to Koepka.
Yeah.
And look what he's done.
Yeah, he's done
nothing.
All right. Nothing or something, maybe. But it was one of these events again where they had the men and women playing on the same course, same time. The prize pot total was 500,000, so 250,000 to each field. And they had a home winner in the women's section, Stephanie Meadow, held off Charlie Hull. Of course, he'll be part of Katrina Matthews' Solheim Cup team by one shot. Hull missed a 4-foot eagle putt on the 18th that would have earned a playoff, but great for Jack Senior. Both Jack and Matt Baldwin, they've been around John a while. They're both from kind of your part of the world in the northwest of England. I know they're good friends as well, so it would be interesting, wouldn't it, battling it out against one of your mates in a playoff, which obviously would mean so much.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously Matt Baldwin's experienced life on tour more than Jack Senior has, who has a little bit. It's a hard place to go back to, the Challenge Tour, when you've had the luxury of the courtesy cars and, you know, walking on the range and the players' lounge. I mean, the Challenge Tour has great facilities, but to go back to the Challenge Tour and try and dig yourself back up onto, shall we say, the Premiership, which it is, the Race to Dubai, is a hard thing to do. But you look statistically, guys that come off the Challenge Tour that have spent a year, get the card and get out on the main tour. It's a real good learning ground for them to be able to compete in, let's be honest, bigger tournaments with better players. That's what they're all after doing. So I've always been a big fan of the Challenge Tour, and I think they do a great job preparing people for this tough sport as a job for life.
Yeah, and Stephanie Meadow, of course, a home winner for the women's side of thing. Michael, Katrina Matthew, last Monday named her Solheim Cup wildcard selections. Obviously, Solheim Cup weeks away at Glen Eagles in Scotland. Good to see Charlie Hull in some decent form. Some interesting selections, would you say?
that's certainly one word for it. Suzanne Pettersson getting the nod, having played two or three times in the last 2 years, I think, is clearly the big talking point. I like the fact Katrina's done it. I know people are asking questions and, you know, pondering whether or not this is an issue of strength and depth in the ladies' game, certainly in this side of the Atlantic. You know, look, it's a match play event, it's a one-off event, and you have to put out the 12 players that you think is going to give you the best chance of winning. Suzanne will thrive on playing. She's a bit like the Solheim Cup's Ian Poulter, in the sense that she could play terribly for months and months leading up to it, turn up and produce her best stuff. You know, I hope she does, because if not, if Europe lose and, you know, lose heavily and Suzanne doesn't contribute much, then people are going to point to that as the reason for the loss, which I think would be a bit short-sighted because there's so many variables. My gut instinct is that she's going to feel that she's got a point to prove. She's going to feel that she owes Katrina something for picking her. And Suzanne Pettersson, when she has that little chip on her shoulder and a point to prove, I think is a very dangerous player. So I am expecting and hoping for big things from her.
I think it doesn't really matter in match play, actually, that you haven't played very much. You've only got to beat one person. You can shoot 78 and win your match. As long as you're beating them on a given hole at the time, she's got experience. I think it'll be a good pick. I think it's a clever pick, to be honest. Rather than going on form, other people might think they should have got in it. It's a cauldron when you step into that, whether you're playing anything, Solheim Cup, Ryder Cup. I think she'll be fine. We'll see.
We shall see. It is her ninth Solheim Cup experience, Suzanne Pettersson, so she has been there and seen it all. Now, on the PGA Tour, the BMW Championship, we mentioned it earlier at Medina, that was won by another Thomas, Justin Thomas. He closed with a 68 to win by three from Patrick Cantlay. Japan's Hideki Matsuyama shot his second 63 of the week to finish two further back. Matsuyama's 9-under broke the course record by two shots. Then Thomas, obviously, with a 61 in round three, broke the course record again. So it came down four shots in 2 days. It means Thomas leads the FedEx standings after a 10th PGA Tour win. Tiger Woods, John, nice to see that he, you know, he was managed to play four rounds and
But he's not advancing to Eastlake. Finished 43rd.
He was playing nicely and he seemed to be fit.
Yeah, listen, I think he's a bit like a classic car. Sometimes it runs all right and sometimes it's not firing on all cylinders. We are always, from now on, I feel, going to see an in and out, up and down, fit or maybe not so fit Tiger Woods. I think everybody got a bit carried away winning the Masters, which was brilliant for his 15th major. But we've seen the best of Tiger, make no mistake, for me. He's still a great player, but he hasn't got that clubhead speed. And he's in his... Is he 44 this year? 44 at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Where has his time gone? I remember him as a 19-year-old. I don't know. I fortunately haven't aged. But he's...
Not much, no.
No, he's certainly had an unbelievable career. So a little bit of a rest.
How would you... If you were going to grade his season, Tiger Woods' season...
Fantastic.
What would you give it? An A, B?
What, to win it? An A plus.
The whole season?
An A plus. To win a major... After what he'd been through, absolutely ridiculous. It's the comeback of all times. It's like you winning Strictly Come Dancing. It was never going to happen.
Well, you just wouldn't
think it'd be possible. It was amazing. But my best moment in golf ever was Woods winning the Masters this year.
A plus for you, Michael?
A for me.
Oh.
I think A the 2000 kind of year. I don't think anything will ever top that in golf. But I actually graded him last night on Twitter and already had some pushback from people on this saying, how can you possibly give him an A? Well, he won the Masters, given what he's been through. Had other top 10 finishes in there. He's played probably half the number of events of most guys on the PGA Tour, and he's come within a relative whisker of making it to the season finale and getting into the top 30. So how can you call that anything other than an A? You know, he was debilitated, lying prone on his back, unable to stand, far less walk, far less play golf, just 18 months ago. So to look where he's come, I think, is just testament to his character, his mental strength, his competitive spirit. I can't see how you can give him anything less than an A. It's been a remarkable season. And yeah, like John says, we've seen the best of him. He's 44, but he's an old 44 at that, with the body that he's got and the fused spine and all the scars and everything that's, you know, hidden underneath. So, yeah, we've seen the best of him. Let's just now enjoy what's to come over the next few years for however long we've got it. We nearly didn't get this. You know, Tiger could have retired very, but he's back. He's won a major, and it's just thrilling to watch him every time he steps on a course.
So that wraps up the week's action, if you like. So where are we in terms of the world rankings?
Well, it's not called the phony world rankings anymore, is it? It's just the world rankings. Well, I can tell you it's still headed by Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson second, Rory McIlroy third, Justin Rose fourth, Justin Thomas fifth, John Rahm sixth, Patrick Cantlay seventh, Tiger Woods, you hear this? Have a look where he was at the beginning of the year. Eighth, well, actually beginning of last year. Ninth, Bryson DeChambeau, and 10th, Francesco Molinari.
Well, next week on the European Tour is the Scandinavian Invitation, which is basically the same event as last year, same course as last year, when it was the Nordea Masters. It's at the Hills Golf and Sports Club near Gothenburg. Paul Waring's the defending champion. Huge win for him last year, John, wasn't it? 200th time. Of asking, so he's going to be defending a title for the first time.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good field as well, as you would imagine. I used to love playing in Sweden. The crowds were enormous. They love their golf over there. And I cast my mind back to sort of late 80s when the federations all put money in and they started to develop these teams. The Swedes did it, the Italians, the Germans, the French. And they reap the rewards back to, you know, the days of Parnevik and Johansson and all that. Anyway, Stenson's playing, which you would expect. Matthew Fitzpatrick, Alex Norén. So two big draws there.
Well, you say that Norén and Stenson actually didn't play at this course last year.
No.
So to have them there this year, it's going to, as you say, big crowds there.
Oh, massive.
And it's going to get, they'll be bigger as a result of those two being there, for sure.
Well, exactly. I mean, they're both world-class players and the fans are going to be treated to that. And then after that, of course, you've got a list of star-studded players coming off the money list. You know, this is a big tournament. It's been golf in Sweden on the Race to Dubai or the European Tour, whatever you want to call it, has been going for years and always been a very popular place. I'm only sorry I'm not going.
I was actually at that event last year.
Were you?
Yeah, at the Hills.
Do you enjoy it?
Sports Club. Yeah, really enjoyed it. The weather was No, it wasn't. It was a so-so, actually, the weather last year. So hopefully the weather will be good this time round. But I remember it being a great battle between, I think, Thomas Aitken, wasn't it, that was in the playoff with Paul Wearing.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting to see. I remember Beef taking off his trousers to play one shot as well. Got down to his underpants.
Well, at least he had some on.
Thankfully, he did. But a lot of water on that golf course as well. I think it plays on something like 9 or 10 of the holes.
Yeah, yeah.
As well. So a lot of risk-reward. So a good
It'll
course.
It'll be a great week.
Yeah, so Johan Edfors has had a big role to play.
Has he?
In the course, yeah. Of course, he won... I think he's the only person outside of Matt Wallace to
won three times
in a single season in a Ryder Cup year.
Six.
And not playing the Ryder Cup.
And not playing the Ryder Cup, yeah. Yeah. He did. That's right. Including one of them being the Scottish Open at Loch Lomond.
Yeah. So he's helped redesign the course. It's on a nature reserve. It's one of the newer courses in Sweden.
Oh, I'm glad you said nature reserve. I thought you were going to say something else.
I know where your mind's going. Yeah. In terms of, does it suit a player? Listen, it's one of those golf courses where, you know, if you hit it a long way, you know, it's going to help you as long as you're hitting it straight. But there is plenty of danger around. And so it's one of those golf courses where you can take things on, but it can trip you up. So I think it's fairly wide open in terms of which golfers it will suit, although I have my thoughts on who might do well as well.
Oh, do you?
Yes. Michael, any thoughts for the week coming up?
I'm excited to see how Paul Wearing deals with being a defending champ. It's a new position for him, but I remember Paul back in his amateur days, and he was a gritty, tough competitor all the way through the England golf ranks. And he's not really quite hit the heights you'd expect necessarily on the European Tour, but this week's slightly different, going in as defending champ. I think he plays better when, you know, the chest is puffed out, as I'm sure it will be this week. So I'm actually backing Paul to do it. I'm backing him to go and successfully defend the title.
Wow.
Wasn't expecting that. Yeah, he finished 83rd on the Race to Dubai last season, so he counts as your choice for someone outside the top 50. So that's not such a bad pick, really. You think he's been in some decent form as well, hasn't he, in recent months. So, yeah, Paul Wearing, why not? So have you got a top 50 on the Race to Dubai player from last season as well, Michael, or do you want to think about it?
I think I'm going to go with a home favourite, and I'm going to go with Alex Noren.
Very good.
Okay, he's won this. Well, he's won in Sweden twice, hasn't he? Before he obviously enjoys playing at home.
He's clearly one of these guys that thrives in the home support. He obviously knows the course pretty well from what I gather. Quiet year, such a hard worker. I mean, I think everyone's seen the pictures now of Noren's hands, I think maybe a year or two ago, with the calluses on them. He looks like a guy that's always kind of fighting, battling his swing, but you know, certainly in the range at least, but then he goes out in the course round one and can produce some really low numbers. So I think, I just have a strange feeling that this is going to be Alex Noren's week. His form's got to turn around at some point, and I think this is the week for it.
Okay, John, have you you got the winner, so well, I'm very interested to hear this.
So obvious, isn't it? Matthew Fitzpatrick and Andrew Johnston, I'm going for.
Okay, if John goes for Matt Fitzpatrick, am I allowed to go for Matt Fitzpatrick as well?
Incorrect.
Oh, that's not very fair, is
it?
Well,
that's your fault, isn't it, for letting me go first?
Okay.
Or second, actually.
Yeah. I will then... So you've gone for...
Still Matthew Fitzpatrick and Andrew Johnston, yeah.
And Beef. So Beef pulled out last week, and I'm not sure the exact reasons.
He was having his beard trimmed.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going for Beef and Fitzpatrick, and we got Wearing and Noren. So then I'll have to, I think, I will go...
Yeah, I know who you're going to pick.
Go on.
You're going to pick Stenson.
Of course I'm going to pick Stenson. But I was going to pick Fitzpatrick, wasn't I?
But my other one's tricky, but I'm going to have a go at that as well.
Go on.
Van Rooyen.
The person I was going to pick was actually finished 47th on the Race to Dubai last year.
Did
so
he,
I
Richard?
I can't pick him. Do you know who finished 47th on the Race to Dubai last season?
Yeah, Lucas Herbert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucas Herbert, even.
I know. Why don't you go for Erik van Rooyen?
Well, he finished inside the top 50 on the Race to Dubai
last
season.
Don't worry about it.
So I'm going to go for another Australian who's doing a Lucas Herbert. So Lucas Herbert last year started the year without any status at all
Yeah.
On the Race to Dubai.
Right, right.
No status, and he played his way in top five here, top five there.
Who is it?
And he got in, and he now has a full card on the European Tour.
Who is it?
So another player done exactly the same thing.
Yes, yes.
Is Minwoo Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Australian player who has got his full European Tour card for next season through doing what he's done this year, which is get invites and earn enough money invites.
That's brilliant, and I wish you well.
Thank you.
But I don't think you've any chance.
Okay. So Minwoo Lee to start winning on the European Tour the way his sister has on the LPGA Tour. His sister is, John?
Related to him.
That's right, Minji. So that's it. That's it for now. We've covered a lot, haven't we?
We have.
Yeah. Remember,
I'm starving. I need my lunch.
What, a salad?
A full salad.
A full salad. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com, the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next time, we'll review the Scandinavian Invitation and look ahead to the Omega European Masters as well. But for now, from Michael McEwen.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
From John Hawksworth.
Bye-bye. See you next week.
And from me, Richard Kaufman. Goodbye.